Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees? Check. Loaner cars and free car washes? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman, Kia of Alexandria. Let's ride together.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Chantilly Toyota. Let's ride together.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Josh Norman.
This is Joe Gibbs.
You listen to Redskins Talk with JP Finley.
What up, everybody? JP Finley, Redskins Talk Podcast. Hope everybody's doing well. Hope everybody enjoyed that epic, epic Tiger Woods Masters win. I mean, that's why we watch sports, dude. Like that is exactly why you stick around through all the junk and all the bad stuff. I got a little bit of a, I got a Tiger story I'm going to tell at the end of the podcast, but this is very obviously a Reuben Foster podcast. I want to be clear that in no way are we going to diminish anything that Reuben Foster has done or even been accused of. But now, at this point, it's time to start talking about Reuben Foster, the football player. So before we get down to business, I want to thank the good folks at Orsman Automotive of Virginia. We ride with them, and you guys should do the exact same thing. Also, want to be sure everybody, Monday, April 15th, tomorrow, hope you got your taxes done, we're going to do one of these stream shows on the My Teams app. It's going to be me and Josh Norris breaking down what the Redskins' needs are and who they should go after in the first round, in the mid rounds, and in the late rounds. If you are into the NFL draft, you are going to love this stream. If you're watching the stream on your phone or on your tablet, or if you put it on your TV, whatever you do, tweet me the pictures. We'll be running all those. I'll be retweeting them. That's always a lot of fun. You can send it to me on Instagram too. Instagram stories works. All my stuff is at JP Finley NBCS. So be sure to tune into that. It's going to be me and Norris on Monday. And then on Wednesday is me and Chris Sims. Same time, 2:30 to 3 o'clock. And we're going to be talking about quarterbacks. I think you guys might be interested in that one. Hockey's back. Hockey Mitch is back. The Caps are back. They're going to spank the Hurricanes. And then this series against the Islanders is going to be epic. Barry Trotz coming back to town. But because hockey's back, make sure you're listening to the Caps Talk podcast with Carlin and Alan May. Those guys have all the breakdowns for you. They go as inside baseball as you can possibly want. It's a really good listen. And now is the time. If you're like me and you watch hockey, you keep up with it all year, but then you really zero in on the playoffs. Now's the time to make sure you're downloading the Capitals Talk podcast. Also, I'm going to be watching game 3 of the Caps game Monday night at Dudley's in Shirlington. Look on the Redskins Talk Pod Instagram if you want to come. All the information's there. Or you can just find them online, Dudley's Sports Bar in Shirlington. I think Pete's coming with me if he ever returns. Pete's on vacation. We'll have to get a full report on Pete's vacation to Michigan. I call it a hunch, but I doubt he's being very financially smart. All right, Reuben Foster. I reached out to Matt Maiocco, who covers the 49ers in kind of a similar position to me. He works for NBC Sports Bay Area. He's been doing it a very long time, knows the Niners inside and out. And this guy knows more about Reuben Foster and everything that he's done, not just the domestic violence incidents, but there was I believe, an arrest with an illegal gun. There was an arrest with marijuana possession. There was an incident at the 2017 NFL Combine. There's a lot to unpack with Reuben Foster, and none of it is simple. He was arrested twice for domestic violence. Both cases got thrown out of court. The NFL investigated. He's been cleared. He is going to play. There is no suspension coming. I was the first person to report that. The NFL announced it Friday afternoon. there is a debate. There is a larger conversation that needs to be had about all of that. But frankly, I'm a football reporter. So what you're going to get from me is largely football reporting. And Mayoko has really the whole scoop on the backstory. So let's go to that interview now. And make sure if you're looking for a new car, Oarsman Automotive of Virginia, go check out Oarsman Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram in Alexandria. It's right there at the Wilson Bridge. They take good care of you. I know the guys there. All right, time for Mayoko and a serious discussion about Reuben Foster, who he is, how he got there, and what he could possibly be for the Redskins defense. And then me talking about Tiger Woods on the back end. Big, big, big thanks to our guest, Matt Mayoko, who covers the Niners for NBC Sports Bay Area. Is it NBC Sports Bay Area or NBC Sports San Francisco? What are you guys?
It is NBC Sports Bay Area. We have the Giants. We have the Warriors on our air. And then we also have NBC Sports California, where you have the Oakland A's and the San Jose Sharks. So we got it all covered out in San Francisco, the Bay Area, California, you name it.
You got it all, but nobody covers the Niners like you do. And, you know, we were joking about doing a podcast together when we were out in Arizona, and it's obviously something we've needed to do for a while. I really want to talk to you about Kyle Shanahan and how that is out there, because the end of the Kyle Shanahan era in D.C., was just such a mess that I'm not sure. I don't know. It's an interesting take with a guy with a fresh start, and just, you know, he really has the keys to the kingdom. That conversation though is probably for another day, because we need to talk about Reuben Foster. Obviously Friday the NFL decided that they're not going to suspend him any games, and I am happy to go wherever you want. For me, I think it's kind of time to talk about him as the football player and what the Redskins are getting on the field. But I know that there is so much off the field that they've got to make sure he makes it to September without any more trouble. So let's just start. What do you think? I imagine you know Reuben pretty well, covered him a couple years. What do you think of Reuben Foster?
Well, I mean, he's a very likable guy. You know, if you spend any time around him, he's upbeat, he smiles, he's engaging, he's just the kind of guy that everybody in the organization likes. And, you know, that certainly worked to his advantage as far as, you know, people thinking that they can change him or he's changed, that he's going to be somebody who, you know, has understood the mistakes he's made in the past and he's going to change. You know, one of the interesting elements of what happened last year was, you know, Washington picked him up and they ended up paying him $250,000 for the rest of that season.
Oh, wow.
With him not being able to practice and him not being able to, you know, suit up for games or attend games. You know, they picked up that contract that the 49ers had for him. And now this fine, you know, amounts to $150,000 that he's going to be missing. So his time with Washington, you know, before he starts playing games, he'll still be $100,000, you know, profitable from that time.
That's really interesting. So, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting element of this where, even though Reuben Foster has had all these mistakes, he's never really been punished for them. You know, yes, he did serve a suspension last year, but, you know, pretty much at every turn, everything he's done, there's been some element of, you know, reinforcement that, you know what, Reuben, you're doing okay. You know, we're going to continue to pay you, or you're going to have a spot here, or we have confidence in you. You can do this. And he's really let people down. You know, he let people down with the 49ers. And ultimately, the 49ers had a lot invested in him, you know, both from a PR standpoint and from the standpoint of, hey, he's going to be the starting inside linebacker for this team, and he's going to be a guy who's going to be a staple in this defense for a long time. So,
well, didn't they trade up to get him?
Excuse me?
Didn't they trade up to get him also?
Yeah. Yeah, they did. And you know, in the 2017 draft, the 49ers fell in love with him. You know, he obviously had some detractors coming into that draft, and it wasn't necessarily him as a football player.
Right.
It was the physical side. It was the character side.
Well, he had that incident at the combine. Remember that?
He had the incident at the combine where he got basically into an altercation with a hospital worker during the physical and got sent home from the combine. I've never heard of that happening.
Right.
And when he came through the 49ers facility, John Lynch fell in love with him. He has a way of seducing people, of thinking, man, you know, he's turned it around. We can connect with him. And John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and everybody fell in love with him to the point that he was the 49ers' number three prospect in that draft. They had him as the number three guy behind Myles Garrett and Solomon Thomas.
I remember.
So the 49ers.
Do I remember this right? In a Kyle Shanahan post-draft press conference, he said that they were thinking about taking Reuben Foster. Where do they pick? Three? He said they wanted to take Foster there, but Thomas was still available or whatever.
Yeah, so what happened was the 49ers had the number two overall pick in this draft, and they had three guys that they really rated higher than anybody else. And those three guys were Myles Garrett, Solomon Thomas, and Reuben Foster. So the Chicago Bears called the 49ers and say, hey, we're willing to move up from 3 to 2, take your spot. All you guys have to do is move back one spot, and here's what we're going to give you. And the 49ers said, absolutely.
Right.
Well, they were in a little bit of a bind because they did want to take Solomon Thomas. And there was thought of, well, what if the Bears move up and get Solomon Thomas? Well, the 49ers were also thinking, I don't think you move up one spot to get a defensive tackle. You move up one spot to get a quarterback.
Right.
However, they didn't know for sure. If the Bears had taken Solomon Thomas, the 49ers with the number three overall pick, they might have tried to move back again and again and again. But from everything I've been told, they were fully prepared to take Reuben Foster with the number three overall pick.
Wow.
But what that trade with the Bears enabled them to do was to move back into the first round, use some of the draft capital that they accumulated through that trade with the Bears. They moved back into the first round, and with the number 31 overall pick, while I believe it was the Saints had called Reuben Foster, the Saints had the number 32 pick, and the Saints, Sean Payton was on the phone with Reuben Foster saying, hey, we're going to take you with this 32 overall pick. And Reuben Foster says, hold on a second. There's a California number coming through on my mobile phone. And he clicks over into the 49ers. And he said, hey, sorry, 49ers. The New Orleans Saints are taking me. And the 49ers said, well, not so fast, Reuben. The Saints have the 32 pick. We have the 31 pick, and we're taking you. At which point, he hung up on Sean Payton, and that's how he became a member of the 49ers.
I didn't know. I mean, I knew they traded up to get him, but that's really interesting that he's on the phone with Payton. So, obviously, he has every physical gift, ability to play football at a really high level. You got teams. He's a first-round pick. He won titles at Alabama. But I haven't watched a lot of Niners tape, but I've looked at the stats and I've watched a little bit. I don't know that he really popped. He looked good as a rookie, but last year seemed like a total wash. And maybe a lot of that was what we have to discuss with these domestic violence situations. But did he ever live up to how much the Niners liked him?
Not really. No, he showed flashes here and there. Here's the thing with Reuben Foster. And if he can ever kind of sort this out, then he will be a good player. But Reuben Foster lacks discipline. And it's in all areas of his life. You know, it's his diet. You know, he loves Cinnamon Toast Crunch. You know, it's in the way, you know, he acts off the field, the people he surrounded himself with off the field. You know, he's not a disciplined tackler. And, you know, through his time with the 49ers, he was known as much for getting, you know, banged up and being out there on the field, sprawled out on the field, and the team's medical staff or training staff would go out, check on him. He'd go off the field, and he'd be back in a few plays later. You know, they really tried to work with him on being a good tackler, on, you know, form tackles and not subjecting himself to unnecessary punishment. But it, you know, he's got to figure some things out. You know, yeah. He's got to figure out the discipline off the field and the discipline on the field. And until he does, you know, he's going to be the kind of guy that everybody's going to look at and say, man, he has all kinds of potential. We like him as a person, but there's so much more out there.
Right. And clearly the discipline's an issue. I mean, the way I look at it, you've got the incident at the combine, which, like you said, I've never heard of, somebody getting sent home from the combine. Then he tested positive for pot, right? Isn't that what the suspension was?
Yeah. Well, the suspension was, I believe he did test positive at the combine and was immediately put into the program. And then he also, his very first offseason with the 49ers. Now, let me backtrack. There were a lot of questions about him, right? Off the field and character.
Sure, yeah.
Through that entire rookie season, the 49ers could not have been more happy with him as a person and the strides he had made as a person, because he had structure in his life. You know, he was coming to the facility every morning at this time. He was in meetings every day at this time. He was out on the practice field. He was lifting. He would go home.
Right.
You know, so he had structure in his life. As soon as the off season after his rookie year hit, then that structure goes away.
Right.
He goes to Alabama. He gets arrested for possession of marijuana. He has the incident, the first incident, or at least one of the first known incidents with his former girlfriend or on again, off again girlfriend.
Right.
Who, you know, those two just simply aren't good for each other. And however you want to parse that, I'm not saying nobody really knows what happened or
right.
what has happened between those two. And I, believe me, I sat in on the courtroom and I left that courtroom after the preliminary hearing kind of scratching my head going, I think I was more confused after that than
really?
I was going into it about their relationship and what had happened. So he also had a weapons charge, you know, illegal weapons that, you know, in California, that we can nitpick this a little bit. You know, it's kind of one of the elements that played into this that kind of worked in Ruben's favor as far as public perception. You know, if he'd done the same thing in California that he did in Alabama as far as the marijuana, it wouldn't have been a crime here. You know, if he had had the same guns probably in Alabama that he had in California, it wouldn't have been a crime
right.
there.
That's
but ultimately he pled to a lesser offense. I believe it was no contest. And the NFL saw enough there that they said, you know what, for the totality of this, and it had nothing to do with the domestic violence accusations, all of which got thrown out of court.
Right.
But it was the marijuana possession, and it was the possession of illegal firearms that gave the NFL the impetus to give him a two-game suspension at the beginning of the 2018 season.
Well, and I don't know if you feel the same way about this. And obviously, you know a lot more because you were at the courtroom and you've been covering him and all this stuff for a few years. It's hard for me to discuss the domestic violence accusations because you have to treat that with a level of seriousness that you know, you and I are football reporters, right? Like, I'm not trained to discuss domestic violence, and I don't ever want to be insensitive to those that have dealt with that terrible situation in their lives, you know. But at the same time, now incidents with this woman have been thrown out of court twice. The NFL, I am sure, has done a very thorough investigation and isn't suspending him. Do you the Redskins, when they claimed Reuben Foster, took a massive, massive PR hit. The organization was widely mocked for saying they don't think he should be suspended. They've done their research. They believe, you know, the situation will be resolved, which ultimately they were proven right. Do you think picking up Reuben Foster, is the juice worth the squeeze for the Redskins?
Well, that is the question. And that's something that I can't answer. That's something that nobody can answer until you kind of see how this plays out. If I were an NFL team, I'd be very reluctant. But as I recall, Washington has a bunch of Alabama players.
A ton. They're projected to have Payne Allen, maybe Ryan Anderson, Reuben Foster, Landon Collins, Sean Dion Hamilton. I mean, they could get up to 6-7 starters on their defensive side of the football that are Alabama guys.
Yeah, and JP, refresh my memory. I believe the story came out last year that management had not consulted any of those teammates, correct?
So we were told they did. Then we asked some of the players, and they said they were not consulted. But then I think a day or two later, they kind of said some of us had talked to them, and the guys the media talked to weren't the right guys. Everything that happened around the Reuben Foster, the claiming him on waivers, the press conferences, the statements. I mean, Doug Williams made a statement that he then had to come back out and apologize. Like, it was just a mess, start to finish.
Yeah. So my point would be that if Washington, if the management there had gone to every Alabama player and said, "Hey, Reuben Foster, what do you think?" I guarantee you that every one of those guys, knowing that, you know, Reuben has had his issues, and Reuben is, in a lot of cases, is his own worst enemy, and sometimes he can't get out of his own way, and his decision-making is suspect. I guarantee you everybody associated with Alabama who were teammates of him would say, "Go for it. You're going to love him. Bring him in. The guy's a baller. The guy is all, you know."
And I've heard that from all those guys since.
That's Reuben Foster. That's the frustrating part, I think, about Reuben Foster, is that he has so many people who are willing to go to bat for him. He has so many people who are willing to stick their neck out for them. And now it's up to him to mature and to realize that you got to surround yourself with people who are going to make you better, not people who kind of bring out your worst. And so it's up to him. He can, you know, going back to your initial question there, yeah, it could turn out to be really good for Washington. Could really be a good move. But he's shown nothing up to this point that would give you confidence that he can capitalize on another situation, another opportunity where basically he's coming in with a clean slate. You know, after the incident at the combine, after all this, he had an absolute clean slate with the 49ers. Even after all of the issues that surrounded him in the 2018 offseason, and it got thrown out of court, and public perception had turned from "get rid of him" to "oh, so that's what the young lady testified in court about. Oh, okay, well, we jumped the gun. Let's give Reuben another chance." Right. He had a clean slate going into last year, and what does he do? He invites the same woman who, you know, was those two were a toxic mix. He invited her to the team hotel in Tampa, Florida, the night before the 49ers were to play the Buccaneers. What's going to happen? I mean, I could have scripted this like, sure. It was too obvious. Those two were going to get into some argument, whether it's physical or not. At that point, it didn't matter. And the 49ers were not judging Reuben Foster. They did not say, "Reuben, we think you hit her, you're off the team." No, their thing was more, "Reuben, we told you what kind of expectations we had for you, and you let us down. We can't trust you. How can you surround yourself? How can you put yourself in that position on our time at the team hotel the night before a game, and you end up, whether you did anything wrong or not, you end up spending the night in the Hillsborough County Jail, you know, 10 miles from where you should be suiting up and playing a football game. Reuben, we can't trust you. Thanks, but no thanks. Now you're going to be somebody else's problem. And I word that a little bit more harshly. And the 49ers, well, I'll say this. People with the team want Reuben to succeed. They like him. I don't know that the head coach would want him to succeed in the current situation he's in.
Yeah. The head coach does not. Here, the head coach does not love the burgundy and gold.
Excuse me?
The head coach does not love the burgundy and gold.
No, no, not at all. So yeah. You know, I'm sure that I'm sure if he had his druthers, Reuben would be somewhere else, and he could, you know, unabashedly root for Reuben to succeed. But you know, I think that he's going to have to make some changes. Maybe he already has taken some steps to make some changes.
Well, and the Skins, you know, Bruce Allen put out a statement that the Skins, it sounded to me, and again, I'm not an expert in these matters, but it sounded to me they have a pretty comprehensive plan to kind of keep him on the straight and narrow. That includes counseling, meeting with the team chaplain, meeting the Redskins had this player development director, this guy Malcolm Blacken, who's one of the just most positive and really influential people I've ever gotten to know. And I know that players love him and what he does for them in their – it's not about their on-field development. This is about becoming men and leaders. And I think if he sticks to the plan that is laid out, I who knows? I think maybe it could work. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, JP, here's the issue is that he's never been able to stick to something.
Exactly.
And the issue is that, you know, the 49ers had a plan for him too. And through his first full season in the NFL, the 49ers were feeling very good about the strides he had made to become a better person and all that. Then the problem is then as soon as the off season begins and there is a limit to how much involvement a team can have in that person's personal life, now he's kind of back on his own.
Yeah.
So there's one person who's going to be able to determine what Reuben Foster becomes. There's one person who has the impact, and it's not anybody in that organization. It's Reuben Foster himself.
Well said, Matt. I really appreciate it, man. This has been very helpful, and maybe we get through the draft, and then we have our bigger Kyle Shanahan discussion. I know you're going to be super busy these next few weeks, just like us.
All right, JP. I'm looking forward to it. The draft should be fun, and always here in California, ready to chat a little football with you.
All right, that was Maiocco. I mean, you want a guy that really knows what's going on. He was in the courtroom in California when everything was shaking out. And very obviously, that is a highly complicated situation. I don't know the answers on this. It will be interesting to see how Reuben Foster does with the Redskins. And frankly, it'll be a big test just if he makes it from now, mid-April, until week one without any other trouble. You know, I don't think there's been that long of a period since he got into the NFL without trouble. So there's your first test if you're looking for one. This is just quick. When Mitch and I were down in Augusta last week, we were watching the practice green, which is kind of up above the 18th hole and above the 10th green, if for anybody that's listening or has been down there. And we were watching Rory putt, and Rory's putter just wasn't there. Anybody that watches golf knows that. But then Tiger came into the practice green, and I have met Tiger a few times, spoken to him super briefly, like twice. I in no way know Tiger, but I've been around him a decent amount, maybe 5-10 times, and I've seen his interactions, and I tweeted this out. I was there 3 years ago at Congressional when he couldn't even hit the ball 100 yards. He couldn't get the ball from the forwardmost tees on the 10th hole of Congressional onto the green. And if you know that hole, it's all about cover. You have to carry a big pond. He couldn't do that. And 3 years later, he's winning the Masters. And what I noticed, so Mitch and I just sat there and watched him putt. And it was he seemed so calm, so easygoing. He was laughing and joking with Rory McIlroy. Zach Johnson came over. Those two were laughing and joking. For a long time, Tiger had this intensity, kind of this brooding nature. And I thought, just watching him putt on a Wednesday before the competition had started, that it seemed like he was so calm and prepared for this event. I later talked to somebody in this kind of VIP area we got to hang out in a little bit that said Tiger was in Augusta the week before and had four practice rounds. So I don't know that that's true, but that's what someone told me. And it just seemed like he was so prepared. Even watching his round Thursday morning, he never once tried to get aggressive like I think he would have before. And he just kind of let the game come to him. And I just thought it was such a cool moment. And then, Mitch and I driving to the airport, leaving Augusta, are like, hey, we both are like, I think Tiger could actually do this. I didn't expect it, but I'm certainly not surprised by it. And for me, as somebody who, I tweeted about this, when I was in Augusta, was the two-year anniversary of my father passing away. And I've become much more cognizant of moments in life that are different because my dad's not there. Certainly the arrival of my second daughter is different because my dad, will never meet her. They'll never know one another. So watching Tiger today hug his kids, knowing that it's his first Masters that his dad isn't there for, just felt particularly touching. And I don't know, man. It was, you guys listen to this podcast. I met a bunch of folks. I was in Baltimore over the weekend. I met a bunch of listeners up there. We have a family, a community. We have something unique and special and wonderful. And, in that moment, you get reminded why we all invest so much in sports. And obviously Tiger Woods isn't the Redskins. It's not what we talk about a lot. But Tiger Woods is such an iconic sports figure that it's somebody we all know, listen to, like. I'm sure there's people out there that don't like him, but the story and overcoming the physical injuries and then everything else he did wrong in his life. Let's be clear. He messed up. But it just, I found it so rewarding and just proof that no matter what happens, you keep going and keep persevering. That's enough for me. Stream with Norris, 2:30, my team's app. I'm going to turn that into a podcast right after. Dudley's game 3, Monday night in Charlington. And then Wednesday, we got the stream with Sims. And then that will be turned into a podcast. You'll hear from Mitch and Pete soon. Mitch is back to being Hockey Mitch. Pete's on vacation in Michigan. Who knows what that dude's doing, but we'll find out. If you made it this far, I owe you a beer.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Fairfax Toyota. Let's ride together.
On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field, too, when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase and Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase and Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.